You're welcome back. I'm with Minister Alan Dillon of Fine Gael, Louise O'Reilly of Sinn Féin and Marie Sherlock of Labour. On Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, marches will take place in Dublin and in Cork and in Limerick, marking International Day for the elimination of violence against women and calling for better treatment of for survivors of physical and sexual and other forms of abuses perpetrated against women. Abuses which we know very often result in lifelong trauma. Now, the accounts of survivors are heard in this conversation, sometimes too rarely. But earlier today, I spoke with Sonia Stokes. And she was abused by her uncle as a child. And this is her account of what happened to her. And just to say, some of the content of this interview may be inappropriate for younger listeners, but it is a key part of the conversation. And I also asked Sonia what she thinks needs to be done to protect women and support survivors from here on in.
So basically in 1984 to 1988, my uncle, name of uncle, if that's what you'd like to call him, my mum's brother, between the ages 7 and 11, 1984 to 1988, my uncle raped me. So he raped me so many times. He was literally charged in the end. It worked out to 15 years for rape, 10 years for assault, attempted rape, and 8 years for the assault. So, you know, it, like, as a child, going back to a child, he really damaged me. Like, he destroyed my school days. My whole life he destroyed for so many years. And not only did he destroy my life, the system also failed me, because this predator was well known to the Gardaí since 1972. And he up and he left, he went to the UK, he returned, he done what he done to me. Back in 2012, I told my family I moved towns. The court was on in 2015. I was so scared, but I was blessed with the victim support unit. There was a young girl called Sarah. She was absolutely fantastic. I'll never forget her. Only for her, I don't think I actually would have got through it. And the support of my aunties and cousins. And so he ended up in 33 years, and all in concurrent, obviously, and ended up with 15 years. So the judge merited 15 years, and he said no, he don't see anything in his favour to give him any days off. That's what the judge's words were. So he ended up getting 10 years.
And I'm sure when you received a prison sentence, Sonia, I'm sure that was it some solace to you? But you were saying that the system let you down. Was a court case extremely difficult?
Very difficult. It was just to see him in the box behind me. I don't even want to think about it, because I know I'll end up with anxiety for today.
Yeah, don't.
And to be honest, it's very hard. Even now, you know, each time having to tell your story, it's just absolutely traumatizing to go back to that exact day. Yeah. It was just something I thought I'd never, ever have to face. I just don't understand.
Do you know, there's an element of this story that I'd like to ask you about, because, and again, any question that you don't want to answer, please don't. It's your prerogative.
You're okay. Yeah.
But Sonia, the day your uncle was released from prison, you were there, you were outside the prison. Can you tell me why, or what made you go to the prison and want to see him leave?
Well, I tell you what happened, actually, is I'm just going to rewind a tiny little piece, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
What happened is he got to 15 years, and I was so happy. I helped many victims, started out a group called Victims Voices to help others, you know, to support him.
Yes.
And all that happiness ended when I got that email from the victims liaison officer. My whole life absolutely flashed before me. So I contacted the probation officer. Obviously was no comfort to me. His due date was the 6th of March. So I contacted the media. So I got in touch with him, because obviously I wanted the world to see his face because of what he'd done to me and so many others. I wanted to confront him on the day. My inner self was just so scared, but I just wanted to let him know that what he'd done to me and others was so wrong. And I thought I might have had that strength to face him.
What happened?
But he was in a taxi. He was actually in a taxi. And they got him out of the taxi, and drove him to Limerick. At the end of the day, that was taxpayers' money. Who's paying for that taxi?
And did you
go to Limerick?
Actually, looking back now, did you feel robbed of that chance to confront him?
To be honest, it broke my soul. I think if I had the chance to confront him on that date, I think I would have got on with my life, being so happy back to myself, knowing I actually had the strength to do that after all these years. But I just said, Jesus, what is this system doing? Paying for taxis to get him down to Limerick. Any ordinary Joe Soap that's locked up for 12 months or 6 months gets out, and they're sent on their merry way, and the media has them all over every paper for simple things.
Yeah.
I felt so robbed, I did.
Did you? And did you worry after he was released, after all of those unspeakable crimes against you? Did you worry then when he was kind of at large?
100%. The system failed again. My nerves came at me and my health went down. The fear, the anxiety. I couldn't stop thinking I'm originally from Limerick, and I have the shivers of thinking about it. Once more, the system failed again.
But you know what strikes me, Sonia, if I may say so? You are an extremely powerful advocate for yourself and for other women who may be listening to you today, who mightn't have the same type of strength to speak up, because what you suffered as a child was unspeakable. It was heinous. It was wrong. And it has obviously had a lifelong impact on you.
And I
know you and others may be at this protest march against gender-based violence on Tuesday.
That's right. Yeah, the zero tolerance. I'm with them girls 1,000%.
A zero tolerance.
1,000%.
Can you tell people what needs to happen in Ireland?
Where do I even start? The justice system needs to change, first and foremost. It just needs to... The Oireachtas needs to pass this bill that we have up. Stand with Matt Carty.
Just to explain,
it's crucially important.
I think the bill that you're talking about would mean that any sex offender would automatically have a lifetime order placed in them, restraining them from ever approaching their victim again. Is that right? Or the survivor?
That's correct. That's correct. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. It's not just a piece of legislation. It's a protection order that's needed for so many. All we want is change, a promise. Many survivors live in fear in their bones. There should be no reason why this bill should not be passed. Us advocates should not be working endless hours and days and nights to support other survivors or victims at that matter.
Yeah.
To be honest, I'm asking this government, just imagine, put yourselves in our shoes and others and feel the real pain. Imagine being that child crying, or a mother that's suffering in silence, or a parent whose child turned to drugs because they weren't believed, or that father whose little girl just got raped. That's real life stories. Justice needs to change. So please support this bill.
I have one final question maybe for you. I think you want to make a point about electronic tagging of perpetrators as well.
Oh, the list is endless. I do indeed. That needs to be done. That's very, to have it in the UK, to have it in other countries. Why not Ireland? Why is Ireland always the last to get everything sorted? The government needs to absolutely wake up and work with us advocates. We know what's needed.
Yeah.
Because many victims cannot turn to the justice system because in the justice system sucks. It needs to change big time.
Can I say to you, it seems that all you're asking for, you and other advocates, you seem to be asking for support and protection to live life freely as a woman in this country. And surely that's a reasonable request. Sonia Stokes, it's my great privilege to talk to you. Thank you so much indeed for joining us.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
And that is the amazing Sonia Stokes, whom we spoke with earlier. If you've been affected by that interview, rte.ie /helplines is where you'll get support. Can I come to you, Louise O'Reilly, but one of the elements that Sonia discussed here, and that's the Sinn Féin bill. But what are you looking for in this bill?
So can I just first say that I want to commend Sonia. It's really not easy. And as she said herself, victims have to repeatedly tell their story over and over again. It cannot be easy. Certainly it isn't easy to listen to, by Jesus, I'd say. It really, really did. And we owe women like Sonia an absolute debt of gratitude for being able to come forward. So I suppose what the bill that we'll be debating on Tuesday, and I do hope that the minister will confirm today that the government will support it. It's about empowering victims and survivors. It's about lifting that burden of anxiety and about recognising the fact that for victims and survivors in this instance, the trauma does not end. It doesn't end with the court case. It doesn't end when the abuse stops. It doesn't end when the sentence is over. It is a lifelong sentence. Those were the words that Sonia used as well. It's like a life sentence. And to ensure that victims are protected from the perpetrator when the perpetrator serves a term in prison, is convicted, that they are protected, that there is a bar and order there.
Is that something, can I ask Minister Alan Dillon, that you think you could support?
Well, firstly, Cormac, just to thank Sonia for speaking out. I think it takes extraordinary courage, and it reminds us all that domestic sexual and gender-based violence is one of the greatest challenges we are facing in our society. To answer your question, government is not opposing the Sinn Féin bill on restraining orders to be automatically put in place upon a conviction of a sex offender. I think we all share the same goal. You know, survivors should not live in fear when offenders are released. I think everyone supports survivor safety measures that work in practice, and I know Minister O'Callaghan will consider the elements within the bill, and certainly government will work cross-party so that protections are strong, that they're workable, and they ensure that they complement the existing harassment and protection laws that are in place.
Mm. Like, why is it, I wonder, that there is a need for this march on Tuesday, do you think? Because we've had periodically in this country now for the last number of years outcries, I would say, from women saying we don't feel safe in our towns and cities. We don't have enough refuge centres for women suffering domestic violence. What about the electronic tagging that was mooted some years ago? I mean, why don't women feel, in your opinion, Alan, and I'll come to Marie in just a second, why hasn't more progress been made on this in this area, do you think?
Well, we are making significant progress, Cormac. And let me say, when Helen McEntee was Minister for Justice, she led the foundation for the Zero Tolerance Strategy. And certainly Jim O'Callaghan is now driving the delivery. And we see that with the final Zero Tolerance Plan, with over 95 actions out to 26. And what does that look like? Well, we've established COON. It's Ireland's first domestic gender-based violence agency that coordinates prevention, protection, prosecutions, and that's the one command centre for action. And it is delivering. We are funding over 78 different services. We're setting national standards. Indeed, in the most recent budget, we've allocated almost €80 million,
I think we still have counties, entire counties, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, without refuge centres.
Well, we're certainly making progress on the delivery,
but
as
is
I
that
said
true?
Earlier. Yes, because you know, if you look at the targets that we've set, you know, we want to double refuge capacity by 2026, from 141 units to 286. Safe spaces nationally. Wexford only recently opened their new units, tripling capacity. And by the end of 2026, we'll have 52 new refuge units.
Oh, okay, so the point you're making, I suppose, is that progress is being made, Marie Sherlock.
Yeah, painfully slowly. It's 14 years since Ireland signed the Istanbul Convention, saying that there should be one refuge per 10,000 people. That would suggest we would need over 500 refuges in the country. And by the end of this year, we're just going to have just over 213. So we're about 300 short. But look, you know, Cormac, you asked the point there. Why should people be out protesting this Tuesday on the day of the elimination, International Day of Elimination of Domestic Violence? And there is a horrendous reality in this country. And we mightn't, you know, many mightn't like to accept it, but there is a reality that the levels of domestic and sexual based violence are going up, not down. We have something of an epidemic within some of our communities, and certainly some of the communities that I represent in Dublin Central. When I talk to families themselves, but I also talk to the schools and talk to other social services, you know, it is having an incredible, a devastating impact.
Why is it going
up? And Sonia,
up?
Well. I think there's a whole variety of reasons as to why it's going up. But Sonia spoke so powerfully there about the lifelong impact on health. We know it's an impact on people's work, on their families, and on housing. And one of the issues that I'm continually coming across is that we have a situation, certainly in Dublin City, maybe in other local authorities as well, that when there's a barring order, so when there is domestic violence within the home and two people are on the tenancy, we'll just say, for instance, it's the man who has offended, that he still retains his entitlement to that home. And so we have to look, that in many instances, the woman has to leave the home, even though she's the victim. Victim here. Mm-hmm. So we need to have a complete overhaul of how we look at housing and all and the criminal justice system. But to the reasons, right, I think because, there is a level of aggression now in society that we haven't seen before.
This is a wider discussion as well, isn't it? Because there has been a recent survey, Louise, of perceptions of safety in Dublin mm-hmm. City. A huge proportion of women responded to that survey and said, I don't feel safe walking through Dublin for example, even when it's light, not dark.
Yep, and we need Garda resources, not just chatting about Garda resources, and most definitely not just the overtime stick and plaster that was applied the last time. I think when you talk to people, when I talk to women, I am a woman, so I can speak from my own personal experience, a heightened Garda presence is very, very important. But we also need to look at properly resourcing our local domestic abuse support organisations. The one in my area, Evenus, they do great work, but I know that they would do more work if they had more resources. And I know that there is a very real need there. And, you know, government need to look at the fact that, like, I was thinking about it when I was driving in here. The first time I went on a march against violence against women was following a brutal attack on a young woman in Dublin. I was 7 or 8. I went with my mother. We're still marching. There'll be a march on Tuesday. Women are still marching. And, you know, the fine words will not help. Resources will help. Education will help. Ensuring a Garda presence will help. Absolutely. Having a zero tolerance approach, not just saying zero tolerance, will help.
Okay.
But we do need those, and desperately need to have those resources in place to ensure that people not just are safe, but that they feel safe. And women do not feel safe.
That march, that protest to eliminate violence against women happens in Dublin, Limerick, Cork next Tuesday, possibly elsewhere around the country as well.